You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Jeffrey Colon. Jeffrey works at the intersection of marketing, tech, and popular culture. Data punk, DJ, podcaster, and author. Jeffrey is a communications designer at Microsoft, where he leads a team of disruptive marketers to develop creative and analytical strategies for the company's search advertising business. Previously, he was vice president of digital strategy at Ogilvy & Mather, digital communications supervisor at 360i, and social specialist at Bond Strategy and Influence. He has written for The Futurist, Advertising Age, and Fast Company, and has been quoted in The Wall Street Journal, Billboard Magazine, Advertising Age, Los Angeles Times, and on NPR. Visit Jeffrey online at jeffreycolon.net, which we will link up to in the show notes. And I am also holding a copy of the brand new book, Disruptive Marketing: What Growth Hackers, Data Punks, and Other Hybrid Thinkers Can Teach Us About Navigating the New Normal. Jeffrey, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Glad to be here.
I am sitting here in my chair with this book in my hands, and I'm frightened. What is the new normal?
Well, that constantly changes now. There's perpetual change in our world, mainly due to technology, which influences behavioral change. So that is the new normal. That is what we have to get used to as marketers, behavioral psychologists, data punks, developers, whatever field or industry we happen to be in.
How has that impacted, you know, when it comes to the discipline of marketing? You know, where do we trip over the new normal most often in our day-to-day?
A lot of it is on the digital transformation that's happening in marketing now. You have a number of automated services, analytical companies, measurement companies, things that didn't exist 10 years ago that are really a big part of marketing. And what it almost has become is like an IT position. What are the best tools that help satisfy your objectives as a business? And how do you put those together? So that's where the creative side really comes in as well, because if you're just looking for plug and play or out of the box solutions, that may not work if your company is a larger company. If you're a smaller company, obviously, you may use less of these tools, but I think everyone has moved into a world now where Google Analytics is part of their repertoire, paid social tools are part of their repertoire, and even what they do offline, how they measure that online is part of their cadence. So if you do, let's say, good old-fashioned traditional advertising, how many searches have gone up for your business after that traditional advertising runs somewhere? And that's applicable to both local and multinational businesses.
Well, and that's such a good point. So, I mean, where does a marketer today start in getting their arms around the new normal and the shifts at play?
Yeah, so I would actually not start with the technology, because technology and platforms will change. You know that. You've talked a lot about that, I think, in your own book and on this podcast. I think one of the things that we have to really get back to is, what are people doing? How is their behavior influenced in the world? What excites them? What trends are happening? And also, what trends are happening within specific audiences based on interests? We have a tendency of looking at audiences now by generation: millennials, Generation X, baby boomers, Generation Z. What we should really be doing is basing that off interest. Do you like skateboarding? Do you like extreme sports? Do you like needlepoint? Do you like food? What things are you into? Because it doesn't matter what age you are. It really is starting to matter more of what your persona is and what your interests are. And that can be both in the B2B and B2C world. Instead of saying, hey, let's go after a baby boomer, we don't really do that in the B2B world. We say, hey, let's go after a chief marketing officer or a director or someone who does search marketing for a living.
Well, and that's such a big thing because it always bugs me a little bit. It sort of seems like it's a fine line between segmentation and kind of broad generalization and stereotyping.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, I think and I think a lot of that's based just on intuition. You know, you have people who say, hey, I think this is what we want our brand to be. And this is what that audience, what we perceive them to like. So they're still throwing a lot of darts at the
right.
wall
yeah,
rather than really using a lot of the information that's available to us now. There's a ton of consumer data that's available, consumer behavioral studies that are available. A lot of this information is free now. It's not, you don't have to pay for it necessarily. Of course, bigger companies will pay for more intense data, but I think even if you're a small business, you can find out what people are into based on what business you run or what you operate and who your audience, is and what drives them.
And why do you think with the rapid availability, instant access of this data, why do you think so many marketers miss this? Or are we getting jammed up? Is it too much choice? What's happening there?
You know, that's a good point. I really like the book, The Paradox of Choice. I think that's actually what's happening to marketers right now. There's so many choices available to us, Nick, that we don't know where to start. So we almost freeze up. And then when you're in a position where you have to take action, many times marketers will just say, well, let's just use whatever solution our competitors are using, or, hey, this sounds like a good solution and I don't have to do a lot of work to figure it out because I'm over inundated with a number of things. I mean, marketers wear many, many hats now. It's not a very easy field, let's say, compared to what it was 20 years ago. So people are really looking for plug-and-play solutions. And I think what happens is they get caught up in the data because that's a big shiny item. Hey, everyone's using data. I need to use data. But they're not balancing that with the creative aspect of, well, how do you implement that data? And what data do you have in terms of, well, how are people behaving on your own web properties? Or how do they engage with your content? Or how do they engage with you in offline circumstances? How do you pull all that together to really have an idea of, who your customers are? And I think as we move more toward personalization, it becomes even more difficult because it's not a matter of marketing to the masses anymore. It's now, okay, Susie likes this. She's, customer one. And Jonathan likes this. He's customer, two. And Ramesh likes this and he's customer three. And we have to remember that the globe is our business now. It's our map in some respects. So we have to take into fact culture and language and actions and devices and behaviors all become very, very different. So you add all that up and it can be, I think, pretty stressful for the modern marketer.
Yeah. I mean, I really think so. And, you talked about, starting, instead of the technology, focusing on your people and not thinking of them in sort of these broad strokes, but more in terms of interests, roles, things that we can identify there. So what do we focus on then as we continue to do our somewhat tech agnostic homework?
Well, one of the things I think is, if you know how people are behaving and what motivates them, what are the triggers that will get them to pay attention and engage with you more? I mean, we talk about engagement a lot, but the reason why engagement is a big area of interest for companies is because it's acting as what I call entry-level predictive analysis. In the past, we would say this company is performing really well because they are making X amount of dollars. Their share is worth this price. They don't have a lot of debt on the books. Those are sort of lagging indicators now, though. So we're really trying to look at, hey, what are our predictive indicators? And engagement acts sort of as that key performance indicator. And it's not 100% science yet because these are still new metrics. They're new analyses that didn't really exist in the world of marketing. So we're trying to figure all these things out as well as try to figure out, well, what does an engagement mean? Does it mean that someone is going to continue to purchase with us? Are they going to be an advocate of our services? Are they going to share our messaging? There's different levels of engagement that it can't be all lumped into one bucket. But I think these are the areas that most marketers should pay a little bit more attention to in terms of your customers are really looking for constant feedback. They want to be able to talk to you. They also want to be able to hear from you so that they can figure out, you know, what are you doing? What are your plans? What are the next products or services that you have? And that can be deployed in a variety of different ways. Right now, it's through the app economy. But obviously, in the near future, that's going to be through the bot economy, or the BOT, I should say to the listeners, or something that we program that acts as a conversation, as a platform.
Yeah, I mean, and it seems like that there, even with bots, literally with the definition of what a bot is, we run the risk of slipping further into making it about the technology, about what the bot's doing beyond what it is we're trying to do.
That's right.
Behind the scenes. And I had to laugh as I was thinking about this, and I should note that Disruptive Marketing is published by Amacom, who's also my publisher of Get Scrappy. And I think we've both written these kind of in-your-face, gritty books about marketing today. But the punchline to both of them is you have to do your homework.
Yes.
You know, because they're gritty books about marketing today. But, oh, hey, make sure you know what the hell it is you're trying to do in the first place.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing or the big takeaway is, you know, right now you have to program a lot of these tools. But if we break it down and just simplify it, forget about the programming, forget about all the data, forget about, all the technology involved in it. What really motivates your customer audience? That's the big question. This is why I think we're getting more into a world, too, where companies are saying, hey, what is our ethical place in the world? What is our corporate social responsibility? Because that motivates a number of people now. Also, what are we doing to innovate our products? For many years, as you know, Nick, you didn't have to innovate anything. You could just sort of put out sustaining iterations of your next product, and you were fine. But there's so much information available now that people are constantly wanting to know, hey, this is a good product, but how are you going to make it better? And this is why the innovation, why so many companies put emphasis on innovation. It's not a buzzword. It's because that is the behavior. People do want to know how you're constantly going to improve the products that you develop and the experiences around those products. And of course, we know that in a variety of different areas, they want to know, is this healthy for us? So in the food industry, it's not a matter of innovating and putting a number of coloring and additives into your food. They want to make sure that that's natural and healthy. In the fields of energy, they want to know that that's, you know, more sustainable energy. In technology, they want to know that they don't have to learn a number of different coding languages to make the technology operate. So, you know, this is all about sort of a forward thinking world that we're in now. And that ties really back to behavior, because people do expect almost better services, better experiences, really as a result of how technology has reshaped us.
So in thinking through that, though, like you said, and what really motivates your audience, how do you unpack at that? Where do you go for that? Is it the, looking at engagement? Where do you find what's motivating your audience?
Well, this is where a lot of marketing now is experimental and trial and error and testing, because if you're looking for, hey, what is the answer to this? It's almost, you know, you don't have the answer unless you try a lot of things. And a lot of that is, well, what content can we try on our audience? What will work with them? What will motivate them? What will get them to actually pay attention? So there's a lot of times where we have tried a number of different forms of content that have failed. And to me, that's a good learning, because you can note right away that, hey, this is not moving our audience. They're not interested in it. They're not saying they're getting any educational value out of it. And they're not excited about it enough to want to share it with others. We know from the psychology of sharing that people are motivated to share with others, because it may make them look intelligent, or it might make them look like they're pioneering. There's a lot of factors on why we share, and this goes even before the social web. There was a reason why people shared information in sort of primitive cultures. A lot of that was because people had to survive. So if you were like, hey, how do I make fire? You wanted to pass that information to everyone else so that you could survive, because you needed the community in order to survive. You couldn't just survive as an individual. And that's the same thing that we have now in the world of business, is what do we want to share so that we can not just survive, but exceed expectations. This is why I think so many companies have really turned almost to a consulting model in the B2B world, because it's not about content marketing as much as it is about education. And people are constantly wanting to learn new things, because things change so rapidly. They want to stay a step ahead. But also, I think people are curious by nature. That's just a part of our, you know, sort of biological traits. So a lot of test and learn on what people, you know, what's going to excite them. And that's not going to come necessarily overnight. So, you know, I always tell a lot of people, you know, hey, get ready to do a lot of these sort of tests. And the wonderful thing about it is the cost of doing that is much cheaper than the conventional way of advertising, if we think about it. Because in the past, you'd have to create an advertisement. It could be a 60-second TV spot. It could be a billboard. It could be a newspaper ad. That was expensive because you had to place that media. There's much more cost-effective ways of doing these tests now, through social media, through search, through tying to sort of events, or even through, you know, good content marketing that gains traction through sort of organic pass along rates. So again, that's where the creative side really comes in. How do you put that creative thinking? Because the technology is only a tool to get this information to people, but you have to really put that creative message and that creative content and that creative sort of drive together from your own thinking.
Well, I love that, and I love that you talk about, you know, how easy it is to test today. And I think sometimes, you know, we talk about all the stress and all the distraction that surrounds marketers today. And I also think, you know, part of that stress and the high stakes of doing it right and of, you know, not failing. And I think what you said, though, is invaluable to remember, and that is one of the lessons that I actually reference also in my book from one of my direct marketing mentors that noted that a clear failure is just as useful as a clear success, because you know one more thing that you didn't know before.
Absolutely. I mean, look at our own lives. I mean, when I get to mentor young people, and I love doing this, you know, a lot of them are in their 20s and they're just starting out. And they'll say, hey, Jeff, I did this and, you know, I it was terrible and I failed. And I'll say, actually, the good learning from that is when that happens again, and it will in a different form, because life is almost like an algorithm, you'll know what not to do. So that's, you know, that's valuable experience. And that's the same thing that you just mentioned there, Nick, in terms of marketing. You learn from that and you then say, hey, you know, this doesn't work. Let's not do this the next time. Let's sort of pivot it in another way and see if it works by deploying it in this manner. And direct marketing is a great example, because there's tons of things that we do in the direct world that we think, oh, we're going to get a bunch of leads. that may lead to nothing. And when it comes down to, well, what, you know, what are we doing that might be that's incorrect here, and how do we adjust that going forward? There, you know, again, I don't like to look at the world as failure as much as, you know, learnings. That's more of the right. sort of growth mindset Carol Dweck talks a lot about in her book Mindset. And I'm sure you've read that.
Yeah, great, great book. I think sometimes we're really just trying to target so precisely and get it so right. And I think it's important to think about. It's kind of like, I'm going to get technology wrong here, but it's almost like sending out like a sonar beacon, and you know at least what's where, and you know the picture becomes more clear too. The more you do, the more you try, and the more you see what works and what doesn't.
That's right. That's right.
So in talking about disruptive marketing, my eyes wandered over to the longer version of your bio where you talk about working with several high-profile music artists, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, The White Stripes, Moby. And I think about, you know, as someone that teaches, that writes about this, a lot of the examples, as we talk about new and emerging technology, a lot of examples that I look at are from celebrities, are from the realm of music, of entertainment. And, you know, sometimes, you get shifty looks from business people. I don't know about that. That's a rock star. That might not fit here. But I think that, and I can't quite put my finger on it, so maybe, are there lessons, are there things, and maybe it directly relates to what we were just talking about trying stuff that maybe the rest of us aren't always willing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think now, because the world is a much smaller place due to the internet and the social web, there are various learnings that one industry can learn from another. So we call this intersectional learning. I think the term has been passed around quite a bit at Microsoft, which is, hey, we're a technology company, but what can we learn from a field like accounting or healthcare or something radically different from ours? And entertainment is a great one, because celebrities, they can't really rest on their laurels in this day and age. I think and you and I are probably in similar, age range, but when we grew up, celebrity could do one film every other year. They never were on TV. They maybe did some product endorsements and they were fine. That has changed for them. They have to constantly weave in and out of different forms of media now. They have to be a recording artist. They have to be in film. They have to do a TV show. They have to do ads. They have to basically do Snapchat and get paid for that. I mean, there's great examples now of celebrities that are getting paid to endorse products on Snapchat and other forms of media. They are almost like media titans in some respect. So the learning from them is, how do they stay relevant, but not only just relevant, how do they really stay engaged with their audience? I'm going to go back to that word again, because they realize, hey, I could be gone. I could be here today and gone tomorrow like that. And I think for a long time, business thought, hey, we are going to be in existence forever. It's like that bad behavioral economic theory that because we're on this trajectory, that's a good trajectory, then we'll be here in the next 10 years. And we know now that not just due to disruptive innovation and other sort of failings, but it's possible to just be gone tomorrow because of a lot of different factors. The economy may change. Business models might change. What people want to do might change. I mean, I never really thought we'd be in a world where car services and taxi services would ever be in trouble. And I'm saying this as a New Yorker. I grew up, I grew up in Philadelphia, but I lived in New York for a majority of my life. You go outside, you hail a taxi. That is very different when I go to New York now. I mean, there are tons of taxis and you take them, but there are a lot of other alternatives now, Nick. And this is why businesses have to, I think, that's what they can learn from celebrities. How can you be here today and stay here tomorrow? Because that is a very quick industry. You know, they like to sort of chew them up and spit them out, so to speak, in the world of entertainment. And I think what they do in that world is very applicable now to the Fortune 500 world, where, you know, the chance of staying on the Fortune 500 list is, you know, maybe 16 years now. Used to be 50 years, and that's going to be much, much shorter in the next decade.
That's, yeah. I mean, you lined it up like that, and plus I you know, am, you know, focus on heavily on branding a lot. And if you think of them all as brands, you know, you've got the Fortune 500 brands, you've got celebrity brands, and you've got a disrupted marketplace. I think the adaptability of brands, yeah, the staying power, you know, you're not going to have these big, you know, venerable, you know, IBMs of the world. They're just going to be this rock and just going to be guaranteed to be there. In a way that they used to, much in the same way, like you said, that celebrities didn't have to be as adaptable. So I think that as they demographically fit new forms of media and are trying new things in an effort to stay adaptable, I think, yeah, there's all kinds of lessons we can find in there.
I also think celebrities will be the first to trial a lot of these new technologies, because they take the attitude of, hey, what do I have to lose? So maybe I'll do my next video of a special version where you need Oculus Rift to watch it. Yeah, it's a small audience that can watch, you know, things that are in virtual or mixed reality right now, but they want to be where the world is moving so they can trial these new things. I mean, if we think now, look at all the celebrities that live online as YouTube celebrities. They're not celebrities in the traditional sense, but we pay attention to them. We watch their videos. We're interested in them. They might be humorous or they might be informative. That has opened up a whole new marketplace that ultimately new forms of technology are going to open up for us. So we always, again, that's where it's interesting to study how behavior will change as a result of a lot of these technologies, and why it's interesting to see how celebrities sort of move in this world, how they use things like streaming services, how they use media to their advantage, how they manipulate media to their advantage. That you know, that hacking ideology, I know that sort of term is overused, but that's very important now in the world of business, because people are looking for that creative edge from you. How are you branding and rebranding yourself and manipulating media in a way that, you know, fits that particular audience? And it's funny, because in one of the talks I gave recently, Nick, there was I was talking to a lot of healthcare service providers, and I said, "What are you doing with your fax campaigns?" And everyone was like, "Oh yeah, this guy gets us." And I was like, "Of course I do. You still rely on a fax machine. That's not going to change. But how do you make that so it's interesting, so when that fax comes through, people are paying attention to you?" And they loved that, because they understood. I wasn't going to push them on, hey, why don't you use Facebook or why don't you use this other platform? I realize they're heavily regulated industries. There's a lot of things that they can't use. So how do they manipulate the machinery they use now to their advantage? And I say that because I used to use fax machines for sort of fax blasts back in the 90s.
And
there's tons of things you can do there that people will say, whoa. Did you see this new thing? We got to order this, because that's how people communicate still in that world.
Very cool. Very cool. I love that. And I remember fax blasting also. That will be our deep cut for listeners out there.
I love it.
Check out fax blasting. It was totally a thing. Jeffrey, as we start to wrap up, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Yeah, so this is going to be an interesting one, and there's two reasons why I'm picking it. One is I have two daughters, aged 5 and 7, and the second reason is this is a Pittsburgh-based brand, and my greater family is from Pittsburgh, and I was just back there this summer, and I really love that city. So American Eagle Outfitters has a brand called, and help me here if I'm not pronouncing it correctly, Aerie. It's the women's underwear brand,
right?
And the reason why I'm picking this is they just have done a series of advertisements. Really, they're for the social web, but video content that uses real women. And I love the authenticity factor now in the world, because I think, you know, having two daughters and having a, you know, a wife that, you know, is really supportive of these causes. I mean, it just makes me smile, because they're not using models like Victoria's Secret. They're using, you know, people who do what you and I do for a living. Digital strategists, mm-hmm. or social media advisors or designers. And that's a beautiful thing, because the web, I think, has broken down this feeling that branding has to be about, hey, you got to look a certain way, uh-huh. you got to dress a certain way. We're now really moving toward, hey, branding is about being natural and owning that and being happy with that. There's nothing wrong with, you know, being who you are. And I think that's an that's a very powerful message. And again, I just like that as a dad, because I think that's something that, you know, I want my two girls to grow up in a world that accepts them for who they are, rather than, hey, you got to look like this.
Yeah, yeah. I can totally see that. That's a great example. Jeffrey, where can people go to learn more about who you are, what you do, the book, everything?
Yeah, so my website, jeffreycolone.net, and I spell my name with a G, so the British phonetic spelling, G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, last name C-O-L-O-N. And from there, you can learn all about the book, you can watch some videos, you can see all the social media properties that I'm on. I allow people to communicate with me on whatever channel they are comfortable on. So I'm across a variety of different channels, from Facebook to Snapchat to Tumblr to SoundCloud. I have a podcast, Disruptive FM, that I do weekly, and a video blog called The Disruptive Marketer that I distribute weekly. And I write a lot on LinkedIn. And yes, I did that way before Microsoft was ever involved in acquiring the property. I've been a big fan of LinkedIn, been on the platform since 2004, and have really watched it evolve, and really excited about where it may go. So you can follow me there. I write a lot about marketing and advertising. That's pretty much, I think, the where most modern marketers are now, is pretty much almost everywhere where we can be.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Jeffrey, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Rebecca Selby gave a shout out to our recent episode featuring Samantha Herschel from Schwinn Bikes. So big shout out to both Rebecca and Samantha. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for listening. And if you heard something on this episode or another that you liked, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let us know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. On Brand is brought to you by the Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd and 23rd in beautiful downtown Iowa City, Iowa. Learn from experts like Jay Baer, Joe Polizzi, and Ginny Dietrich right here in the heart of the heartland. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.